This is the Get a Life Podcast, Ex-Cult Conversations.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Get a Life Podcast, Ex-Cult Conversations. I am Cheryl. I am an ex-member of the Exclusive Brethren, now rebranded as Plymouth Brethren Christian Church. And today with me, I have Cassie and Ben, who are also ex-members from the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church. And today we are going to go through an article that was just recently published by Michael Batchelard and Lucy Mackin. And so we're going to go through that. And we're going to dive into why it's so important to go through this second article and keep this going. I know many of you have been watching social media. We have also been being reached out by quite a few insiders. And this is not sitting well inside, as you can imagine. And yeah, we have been told to be careful, and we have been told to make sure that we have our electronics safe. Mine are, and I'm sure everybody else who is on the front line are. I get mine checked all the time. So yeah, there's no way of getting in my stuff, and I have nothing to hide.
Exactly. What are they going to find? We've got nothing to hide here. So Welcome.
Yeah. My home is your home. I'll meet you at the kitchen table. We'll have a conversation. We've been saying that for a while. Bruce, you can send your minions to my front door and we'll come in and I'll pour out the tea and coffee and we'll have a conversation.
Well, that's just it. I'm saying, like, if you're not a cult, stop acting like a cult and come and have a conversation.
Exactly.
But that, for them to do that would be to admit that they are any at all wrong, you know? So for them to actually come on board and have a conversation would, for them, in their minds, you know, mean that they'd acknowledge what we're saying. And obviously we know that's never going to happen.
No. Yeah. So this was the second article that was put out by Michael and Lucy Mackin. And this one is called "The Eastwood Mansions That Signal the Vast Wealth of the Exclusive Brethren Hales Family." And this was a really, really important article to get put out to really show the vast amount of wealth that they sit in and live in, because it's completely different from when I left. I mean, I left in 1992. This was absolutely unheard of now back then. Now this is normal of these Haleses and the people in the hierarchy having these massive, massive, massive mansions.
I think even when you left, Cassie, it wouldn't have been such a thing. Like, it still would have been, you still would have been ostracized or looked down on for showcasing wealth, right?
Oh, hell yeah. Like, I remember we had, so mum and dad, when they got married, they weren't allowed to build their own houses. But unfortunately, where dad came from, it was such a tiny town, there was no houses to buy. And so they had to build a house, and their plan had to be fully, like, checked over, and it had to be very simple, a really, like, small family home with I think I only had three bedrooms, in fact.
Essentially, your parents had to get approval, is what you're saying.
Yeah, had to get approval to build that house. And it had to be very modest. It had to be really modest and very tiny. And then years later, obviously with, I think it was 8 or 9 kids at the time, we had five boys in one bedroom, me and my sister in another bedroom, and the baby with mum and dad. We had to do an extension. And then once again, that extension had to be heavily scrutinized before they could build. So that was in my time. And I left only a year or two after BDH took over. So the amount that has changed since then is mind-boggling to me. The emphasis on the houses and keeping up with the Joneses and better and better and better, just mind-boggling, really.
And I saw that in particular through my lifetime. You know, I was in the cult 24 years and escaped 7 years ago, 8 years ago, actually, this month. And for me, like, I remember young kids, they were building their homes, they were buying houses, and if they renovated, you were allowed to, but you had to leave an existing wall. It was so odd. Like, you'd have to leave an existing wall. And I remember one guy, like, pushing down the last wall while everyone was asleep and being like, oh, it fell over, and so he could alter his plans and do what he wanted. But, like, everyone else that was too afraid to break the mold, you know, left one wall standing. And they often, you'll find, have these little idiosyncrasies that they'll hold on to so fastly, in the same way we see that, you know, coming out in every other facet of their lives. You'll see them hold on to something so as to not lose their, you know, connection or the ideology of being part of the brethren. And, like, you see that, I think, from what I've seen, I see that in other parts. Like, for once, you know, when I saw my auntie going for a walk with a random outsider, a non-community member or a worldly, I questioned her on that. I'm like, yeah, you won't come and have a chat with me. And she held on to the little part of that and was like, well, I don't see a problem with walking and talking with another Christian. Like, well, you don't know if I'm Christian or not. What about me? But, you know, like, it's just they'll hold on to little bits and pieces to, you know, help navigate this extreme religion, these extreme beliefs. And then it moved to you could do whatever you want with the houses as long as you got approval. Like, I remember when my parents renovated, they just sort of, you know, ran it by someone else within there. So, and it kind of, whatever happened up higher in the echelon of the society, like with the Hales family or the next families down, kind of filtered out throughout. Mm-hmm. And that's where the precedent for rules were set, kind of like court,
it's whatever they wanted to do at the time. They then had to bend the rules to make it okay so that they didn't get questions. So
yeah,
they just adapted and changed things slightly along the way to allow them to do whatever they could, they would, you know, whatever they wanted, essentially, to build this system and also keep control. So,
and you're talking about the Hales family in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they slowly realized that they had control over this huge group of people where they could bring back their system. And I mean, ironically, it's called an ecosystem now. But it's still a system, right?
Yeah.
And talk about the system days, you know, and then they bring back the ecosystem. So yeah, it's ironic.
It's the same. It's the same business model with a different name. Like, you can put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Essentially, like, and we're seeing that in every facet of their lives, like whatever they want. And I think it's important for anybody listening to this that's not brethren, it's important to know why we're talking about this, because we're bringing up the juxtaposition that is the rule changing within the brethren that you literally get whiplash from trying to keep up with, can we do this, can we not? Like, 1 year, it was no fax machines. We were paying people down the street. We were going to some little old lady's house to give her 50 cents to send a fax for work. Then cut to 5 years later, everybody had them. But what about the people that were excommunicated prior because they had fax machines? It's this whole whiplash with massive rule changes that really affects people and ultimately breaks up families, which the brethren say, we don't break up families. No, you don't. You don't set out to, but your rules that you stipulate and stick by, they're the parts that cause the trauma. They're the parts that break up families. And it's the same with why we're bringing it up is because it's the same with these houses. So my family and everybody that lived in the area of Windsor were made to move, right, because the Bruce Howes' father didn't agree with them living here. So some dead guy didn't want them to be here. That's why they all moved in, you know, acknowledging their sins and saying sorry for being part of the movement that was never meant to happen. He has for years said they were never meant to live here. Yet in the same year that they're moving, this article exposes that Gareth Howes is buying a property up in the hills behind where all the brethren were made to move out back in his grandfather's time and now today in his own father, the leader's time. Why is there one set of rules, begs the question, why is there one set of rules for the Hales sons, but a whole nother set of rules for the lower echelon of the society, my family? That's the hypocrisy. That's the juxtaposition of being higher up in there or down the bottom with the rest.
Yeah, and if we go back, I just want to reiterate what the system days were. So the system days were back in, it was the 60s, right?
And that's a term just for outsiders, because I know like we're well aware of the jargon that we get caught up with. Because
yeah, so that's why I just want to explain what the system days are to the. Go ahead, Ben. Explain the system.
I don't actually know. You'd probably have a better understanding of that. But system days is a period of time, like us to keep it relevant, like us talking about the Cold War era, or like the Golden Era, or the Victorian era. It's a time period within the Brethren, like they call it. An Aberdeen time period was when there was a huge split in the church, and because the leader was found naked in bed with a woman, and essentially the church divided, and some left and some stayed.
And then the system days were that more of what's happening now, right? It was commerce in the assembly. It was when they were really getting into trying to figure out how to do exactly what they're doing now.
Commercialize the whole church, basically, is what they were trying to do. And they were bullying people that, you know, weren't towing the line in business and weren't doing well in business. And it was all about making money.
And I don't have an issue. I'm glad that they are. I'm glad that the Plymouth Brethren are upgrading their technology and that kind of stuff. I'm glad that they've gone from fax machines to where they are now. We've needed that. Like that's a good growth. The thing that we have an issue with is the way that they have created this ecosystem in there. It is so locked in financially with these massive houses. They get paid extremely high amounts of wages to be able to afford what they're doing, that if any of these people wanted to leave, they can't leave, because they, for them to come out and have like a regular job with a regular paying thing, would never be able to pay for their mortgages that they have.
It does set you up for failure, because you're given a lifestyle that you can't set, you come out of there, right? And I know this from my own experience. I came out not realizing that, yes, money, you do learn money skills in there, but you have such a way of life in there that you come out going spending the same. You can't do that. That's not normal and that's not real. But in there they prop you up, because they have such good businesses that bring in such extreme amounts of wealth, that the wealth is very evenly distributed amongst the lower ones. Obviously the higher ones up in there have a lot more. But
it's not necessarily
there's no real poor people.
It's not necessarily well distributed. They have the appearance of it.
No, that's the issue with this. Right?
Yes, this
that's
is my
the
issue.
So this is what I mean, like the lower they are, the better they all have the same amount, really.
Well, they appear to, but not necessarily, because I know of people that are in huge amounts of debt and have been encouraged to take on more and more debt, and they actually are stressed out to the max trying to survive and trying to pay off those debts, and they have the appearance of having money, because they have the house and they have, like, they've taken massive mortgages on their house. They hardly own their house because they've been encouraged to take on more and more debt to get on the hamster wheel, because that's how you control the lower ends of the society, is because you get them on the hamster wheel where they're so reliant on the system and the ecosystem, they can't get off.
Yeah.
And that's how you control the lower ends of the food chain. Like the people at the top, they don't want to go anywhere. Like their life is great. They've got money. Money to spend. They can just live their life. They can spend on whatever they want. They're not going anywhere. They're not the people to worry about. However, they don't want to, they've got to control that as well, because if any one of them gets too wealthy, they're then a threat to the Haleses. So they've also got to control that. They've got to keep all the money at the top.
And this is why you'll notice like random families that were, you know, the bottom end of the scale of popularity, all of a sudden are best friends with the Haleses or valuable assets to the testimony, because their income, they've made a great business deal and made a shit ton of money. Then all of a sudden they are like, no, he's a valuable confidant, you know, like he's a valuable asset to the assembly. Because you've got to keep them close, right? Because they're the ones with the money. What I was suggesting was with the lower echelons of society, of the Brethren Society, was that Yeah, they all are up to debt in their eye, like up to their eyeballs in debt. But it's because their lifestyles are so expensive. Like they have to maintain this lifestyle. They have to maintain, you're right, Cassie, this image. But at the end of the day, if they left, they still wouldn't be paid the same. They're still paid quite a lot. And I get asked this a lot from people that work for Brethren, non-community members. I'm like, yeah, you can bet your bottom dollar you are paid considerably less than somebody that's probably below you. But because they're in the workforce, but because they are a community member, they're paid a lot more than you would be.
Well, they have to be, because that's how they hold on to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And there's been, since Bruce was in North America, there are a lot of businesses that are being reviewed right now for not making enough money. You've got to make 5 million. If you're not making 5 million, like, they're talking about selling. So
I know of people that were told to sell. I know of people that were struggling in business and were told to sell up. And now they're working for other people and they're on the hamster wheel and they can't go anywhere.
And yet, if we go to this article, so let's just go to this article. Let's dive into this article. The stuff that they say in this article is so full of BS that it's...
The other thing I wanted to say is we don't have a problem with them amassing wealth and being good at business. There is no issue with that. They can have, you know, like, obviously there's people everywhere that can amass, that are great businessmen and can amass wealth and do all that. It's the morally corrupt stuff that goes on that we have a problem with. And there's no way they can skirt around the fact that they are just morally, what they're doing and the way they're controlling the system is morally corrupt. And I've heard it said, you know, about this whole thing with the ATO raid, that they're too clever. They'll never get them. That's the comments that are coming from the inside, is that, oh, they're way too clever. They'll never get them. But that's not the point. If the point is that what they're doing is morally corrupt. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile it with Christianity? How do you reconcile what they're doing with any form of Christianity? That's what the problem is.
They don't practice what they preach.
And for anybody outside, the reason I guess we're saying that is because that's what they uphold everything to the Bible, to, you know, what they're taught in terms of belief. Out here, we're like, well, yeah, any facet of religion, you wouldn't put somebody in a situation like this or maintain this level of corruption where it's, you know, it's essentially a pyramid of wealth that is fed upwards to the leadership. And people, you know, I think we've got to understand too that when these people pathologically think their worldview is correct, they are unable or even unwilling to change. Like they won't acknowledge it. It's like that we've often been reminded, it's that cognitive dissonance that absolutely no way can they fathom it for one moment, because then they'd have to admit their part in it and have to admit how far and how much of their life they wasted. That's why you get these people leave the Brethren in their really late stages of their life and are totally unhinged. And with, you know, it would take a serious amount of therapy and help to get and self-awareness to get a grip on the world, because you're acknowledging and coming to terms with the fact that you've wasted so much of your life in something that was not real.
Yeah. And I mean, the other issue that I have with the wealth and the distribution of the wealth is that I shouldn't get emails saying that they witnessed someone using the food bank or having insiders reaching out that are just strapped. Like they have no money. They have no money because all their money is allocated so much outside and into the Brethren and all these different funds that are going on that there's nothing left for them. So,
well, they have household commitments. They have household targets of spend that they have to spend on campus and co and so on. So, like, they're literally strapped.
And for people outside, campus and co, so the Brethren, the cult now, have set up shops within there. So they have their own schools. They have their own technological company where your technology comes from, like your laptops and phones, which are heavily monitored and controlled, as we all know, like communist internet. But then, as Cassie's talking about, is the Campus & Co., which is a shop, essentially, and it's all part of this ecosystem, which both of these articles have covered, whereby you have to spend a certain amount per week within this shop to help maintain funds for the school. But the thing is, the schools already get a significant difference amount in funding from the government even. So there's a lot of money for these schools, which aren't really, you know, from what we can see and from what people that have left as teachers can see, the funds aren't being spent on the schools.
No. So if you go to podcast, if you go to podcast 101, it's very, Damien Hastie goes very in depth to it on there of like how the funds are dispersed. So yeah, we know that these funds aren't going where they think that they're going at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to read out the very first paragraph here. Of all the tens of millions of dollars of residential property purchased by the Hales family in Sydney's northwestern suburbs, none of it is held in the name of family patriarch global leader Bruce D. Hales. And we know that he's done that on purpose. He has it in everybody else's names.
But, and also just on that note too, like, for you to be putting things in your wife's name, not Bruce's name, you're well aware of that you're doing something that's under the radar, that you're well aware that you're going to come under scrutiny to know, to even do this. So you know that you're doing what's wrong if you're already setting yourself up to be, you know, to be safe and to be protected. You're well aware that you have to acknowledge you're doing something wrong to be able to hide it in the first place. Right.
Yeah, and it happens everywhere.
Fear, and God is on your side.
Yeah, it's not unusual, Ben. Though it's very common thing to put properties in your name, wife's name, to say to protect.
No, I mean like Bruce has nothing in his name, right?
Yeah,
everything appears to be in everyone else's.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Except no, I believe that the church deeds are in his name.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they have to be, because if like all the church deeds have to be in his name, because of what happened around Aberdeen when the church split, half the properties were taken because some whole congregations left.
That makes
and
sense.
And they took with them the church buildings. So,
and that's assets,
to
right?
Negate
that's
that, yeah, to negate that issue happening again, where people could leave and take the building with them, or the properties or whatever in that area with them, they have put all the churches in his name, so that, or in the leader's name, so that if whole congregations leave, they can't take the property. That's to hold on to all the property worldwide. Like,
okay, so let's just go through this. So it's just, he gives an overview of, you know, Bruce Hales taking over his dad, and how he had different plans. But one thing that I wanted to go into here is the this paragraph here. The first thing he did was to seek political influence. Though they are prevented by their beliefs from voting in elections, the Brethren have no rules against lobbying. Since 2004, they have courted conservative governments across Western world with donations by lobbying them and even campaigning on their behalf. In the months before the 2007 federal election, Hales and several other senior Brethren flew in his private jet to Canberra and used the special parliament lobbyist passes they had been granted. Met then Prime Minister John Howard in his office. Secrecy under the Labour government means requests to find out if they still hold such passes have been rejected. So I just want to say, one of the biggest things that I know after Bruce Hales' dad, John, left or passed away, Bruce knew. I firmly, firmly believe Bruce was in on this far before his father passed away. He knew what he was getting into. He knew what he wanted to build. And this was the finishing of the system days that they were trying to do back in the 60s. And what do you have to do? Of course, you've got to get the government behind you. And this doesn't just happen in Australia. This is everywhere. This is the United Kingdom. This is New Zealand. This right here in Canada. I mean, we've done podcasts on what they did here in Canada with Prime Minister Stephen Harper. So this is the one thing that he knew that he would have had to get into his belt. He would have had to lock down the government. And they are horrible, horrible when it comes to lobbying the government. I shouldn't say they're horrible. They're really good at it. But it has been...
Well, they've got the money to. They've now got the money to lobby the government. So they get into bed with the government, and then the government will turn a blind eye on anything that they do and actually support them. And this is how they get their, you know, PPE project contracts and everything around COVID, because they're in bed with the government officials. Yeah.
So it goes on to say, such deep political connections have paid off. Their school system, which Hales has explained in his ministry, was designed to protect students from being defiled by non-brethren children, has attracted generous government support, and through their public-facing charity, the Rapid Relief Team, they woo politicians from local government up. This is where I want to stop and just unpack this a bit. Because as much as they come across and say that that's one of the reasons why they created OSG, One School Global, was, you know, to keep them from defiled by the non-brethren children. It actually is the other way around. We have done podcasts on One School Global. We had a ton of comments on the bullying and everything that goes on inside the One School Global. If anything, they took a very, very horrific seed and planted it and gave it life. And now it is just this rampant bullying, abusive system they have inside the One School Global. And that is proved in many of our podcasts that we have done on One School Global by other people's opinions that have come in and what they have witnessed and seen. Also, we have many teachers that reach out to us with their experiences that confirm that this is not true inside there, that they are not being kept away from the non-brethren children. In fact, it's just grown rampant in there, the bullying and everything else that goes on in there.
Well, the reality is it's not actually about protecting them from being defiled. It's protecting them from information. That's the sole reason that they have to homeschool, is to protect the kids.
They're not going to say that though, right? Like, that's
no, they're not going to say that.
If they there's a reason in the brethren, in the actual cult, they call them the potential. And that is because they have the potential to sustain the cult, or the potential to be the end or the finish of the cult. And you think about it like that, if those kids were in regular schools, they'd have be exposed to regular, normal people with regular opinions, they would never, ever sign up for or be a part of this ecosystem, as they call it. And therefore, they wouldn't have a cult. They wouldn't have this money-feeding pyramid scheme whereby the houses can afford to buy these McMansions in regular Ermington or wherever it is.
Eastwood.
Yeah.
So this is a picture here. It's called, underneath the picture says, the Hales family mega mansions. On the left, the home of global leader Bruce Hales and his wife Jenny. On the right, the home of Gareth Hales. And at the rear, a new mansion is taking shape to be the homes of Charles Hales. So, I mean, these are massive, massive homes.
Yeah. And also, like,
good on them. I mean, good on them. If they can afford them, good on them. But how about we maybe sell one of your homes and you could fund One School Global for a whole year globally?
Yep.
And how about you do that instead of asking for money from the grassroots members? How about you just sell one of your mansions?
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say. This is the thing that I think outsiders, you know, may not be exposed to like we were, is we all know where this money comes from. We know that it's not, yes, it might be from their businesses, but every single, the way they've got there has been propped up by the people under them, the people within that pyramid scheme. There's no two ways about it. We know that.
Even the way they've gone about their businesses is not morally right. Like,
well, it's not even ethical for business. I think it's not ethical.
Non-ethical, and it's power, control, and bullying that has got them to where they are.
It's also fraud to some point. Like, if you think about how they coerced certain schools, brethren schools, to, was that the Steve Simmons podcast where he spoke about? You know, essentially bullying people into, well, using their faith to be like, well, if we're all going to excommunicate you if you don't sign this agreement or agree that we fit out your school.
Yeah, we're going to take you off the trustees. You'll be taken off as a trustee.
Yeah, so it's, but that's another
the money laundering. Okay. The money laundering of gathering the money in a charitable sense, and then filtering it through a charity, but then using their own businesses to absolutely ream those charities and take the money back into their own name. That's the whole money laundering thing. It's completely unethical. Yes, it might be done according Like they may not have broken any laws as such, but ethically,
well, they must have at some point, because there's a reason the ATO is investigating them for the second week in a row, and we're just waiting to hear back if they're still there, like a third week in a row. Like,
we had confirmation that ATO was still there as of April 2nd. Guards still outside and at the reception. Staff are still not working there. And PBCC members are still minimal.
There's no way that the ATO springs a raid on you just for a suspicion. They have to have something.
No.
And so it'd be interesting to see what comes. You know, and that's why it's so important that we're doing this podcast, is because we're keeping it fresh and current, because we know that the people inside listening, yes, they might have access to this, but we know that the only news they get is the news that the leaders want them to know.
Yeah, going back to the political side of things, nobody would have known, the grassroots members would not have known that they were dabbling in politics, because all they know is that they don't vote for conscience reasons. So all the grassroots people are just going on thinking, you know, oh, no, we don't dabble in politics because we leave that to the Lord. That's what they're told. But behind the scenes, the elite and the heads of the church are heavily lobbying politics and controlling the politics. So this is how they control the narrative, because they don't let the grassroots people members know the truth.
And because if they did, they wouldn't be there.
How does that work? How do you do how do you do the mental gymnastics around the fact that we don't dabble in politics because we leave that to the Lord, and we, for conscience reasons, we stay out of politics, but behind the scenes the top leaders are heavily involved in the politics.
Yeah. The people with money are lobbying, campaigning for it. And we all know that is because they want right-wing conservative government. Again, it's back down to the same reason, you know, I can say to my mum, well, this rapist groomed your daughter, and yet you know he's a rapist, but you're just saying to me, well, it's between him and the Lord at the end of the day. Like, that, it's the same mental gymnastics they've had to do all their life. God, it must be exhausting to try and convince themselves that this is the right path, we are the chosen ones, when they know deep down they're not.
And I don't, like, again, I'm just going to read this. It says, and investigations by this masthead can now reveal that in the more than 20 years since Hales became world leader, his immediate family have emerged as arguably the largest private owners of a residential real estate in Sydney's Northwest. Again, if they're going to own these kinds of homes and they're going to have this kind of wealth, it needs to be spread evenly. And I think through, was it one of the podcasts we did, whatever, the one with Damien Hasty, that we figured it out that with all of the wealth they had, with it spread between everyone, it should come out to like $500,000. Everybody should have $500,000. And I can guarantee you, by the emails that we get and those insiders that are at the bottom of the totem pole are not getting it. So that is what we're trying to point out, that this is a cult.
Is that $500,000 for us that have left too?
Well,
for a friend.
But I mean, it is, it's just, you know you're in a cult when, right?
Yeah.
That's the point. In recent years, they have coughed up more than $75 million on luxury homes and estates. That right there, and I think from the calculations that we have from One School Global that Damien Hasty's had, that would do half a year of funding the entire thing, operation of One School Global. So, like, it's just, this is not being distributed properly. This is the hypocrisy of everything. This is why we're trying to point this out. So those that are inside, you know where your money is going. Your money is going, and you are giving them all these luxury mansions while you're sitting there broke.
Well, it's hard to reconcile the fact that when, you know, other people can't afford to, I don't know, upgrade their home appliances when they should be really wealthy. They've got really successful businesses, but they can't afford to upgrade home appliances because they are committing so much money back to the church. And then you look at this and you see the elite just, you know, running with all that and spending on their own wealth. It's hard to reconcile.
Yeah. Now, here we get into their spokesperson. So this is where they really pull out the lies. A spokesman for the PBCC said, UBT is a business owned by church members in their own right and not on behalf of the church. Regrettably, there is confusion between church members and the church itself in this regard. And we know from recent leavers, people who have left, that you are pretty much forced to have your business part of UBT. Right?
Like, not only that, every single member is forced, mandatory, coerced to have phones and laptops bought from them. I remember having a non-UBT phone or OneFocus, whatever it was back in the day, and I was offered the same amount of money that I paid, like double the amount of money, sorry, I paid for the phone that I bought that was non-Brethren for me to go, and they would buy it for me. So they bought my non-Brethren phone off me and then paid for me to have another phone. Like, there is no way that, like, how that is the, I haven't read anything more untrue in my life, that you can't coerce a group of members that is the church to have a phone and then say they do it in their own right. That is the biggest lie I've ever read in my life.
Well, if anybody has come up against UBT, I'm sure they could attest to the fact that in their Priestleys, they would have been threatened with the fact that UBT is Mr. Hales' business. So yeah. You know, you better be careful.
And again, I'm just going to redirect people back to podcast 101, where Damien completely shows the link between, it was shown in that podcast, the link between UBT, RRT, everything, and Bruce Hales and the church. It's all proven in there. Documents at all.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to go onto the former employees that have come in here, people who have come in here or made comments anonymously. Four former employees of UBT interviewed by this masthead after the ATO raids at the Sydney Olympic Park office and elsewhere last week say that despite denials from PBCC, the business is inextricably intermingled with the church and its finances. All the former employees have signed confidentiality agreements as condition of their departure, so are speaking anonymously, but each separately said that inside the UBT headquarters, they found a toxic, highly controlling, tightly surveilled workplace rife with sexism, bullying, and racism.
Not surprised at all.
And that we know. I'm going to go through some comments that we have found online, either through Ben's TikTok or Reddit.
I mean, you can go to any page. You can Google Exclusive Brethren anywhere that there's a comments section. I pulled up my friend Matt Cook. Did a thing with Current Affair about 3 or 4 years ago, and I remember pulling up the Channel 10 or whatever it was, news special, and I just the other day was going through the comments. Actually, I'll pull it up now, and it was just really interesting. I was like, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. They're still the same toxic bunch of people. And it's not, these aren't Brethren commenting. These aren't ex-members commenting, obviously. These are non-community members that have had this experience.
Exactly.
Well, when you've got that worldview that you are elite and you are above everyone else, you've got no empathy, no compassion, no feelings for anyone that's not part of the community. So you don't care.
Yeah. So this is a comment on Reddit. I live in a town that another Redditor has listed, and I've worked for them in the past. They own the biggest businesses in town and their houses are mansions compared to the rest of us peasants. Thing is, despite their shady dealings, dodgy employment practices and insular communities, they have so many people in the town duped that the town would be stuffed without them because they are so economically ingrained in the town. But I say, one, why should we have tax dodging cabal of religious zealots dictating the prosperity of our town? And two, we, the workers, are the ones who make them this wealth. They would be stuffed without us. It is true, though, that they absolutely have weight in town and they will throw it around whenever they'd like. And I have personally experienced what happens when you don't play ball with them. And by that, I mean blacklisted at their other businesses for employment. It sucks, but most rural small town folk believe small businesses to be the backbone of the community. So we as workers must be subservient to them.
Yeah. They're just bullies. This is, yeah, they're great at business, but more so they're bullies.
Yeah.
And they have the monopoly. This is what I keep saying. They have the monopoly to just bully people. So it's not all about great business. It's all about...
They have the money to. Yeah.
So, and then there's another one. The town I live in is about 35% plus owned by them, with most of the major contracting and supply stores all owned one way or another by the church or its followers. The funny thing is, on the surface, you would never know. It's not like they hang huge signs advertising their affiliations. But the second you try, compete, or operate a business, you quickly find out that somehow all the local suppliers know what you buy or sell to the others and for how much, for example. It is very pervasive. They own half the town in Swan Hill, Victoria. The businesses are notorious for getting in trouble with WorkSafe. I hope the ATO take them down. So, and I mean, we've heard this before. I mean, it's called WorkSafe, obviously, in Australia. We've had people on this end, too, the same kind of thing. They've come on and expressed their concerns of safety inside Plymouth Brethren Christian Church businesses.
The trouble is when these authorities get involved, they just throw money at them to fix the problem. They have no intention of actually complying. They will do what it takes to get them across the line, to tick the box. They will throw the money at them because they've got money to spend, and that's it. The authorities go away. So it never actually gets fixed.
Yeah. Here's another comment. Worked for a business owned by a Brethren family. Never got a pay slip. Never got a cent of super pay to me. Fucked a lot of them. Seriously. Then another comment. Report it no matter how long ago. You might just be helping out a wild bunch of people while exploiting them by them. Now, even if it was too long ago, or well covered up for your super to be recovered. And then it just goes into... Another comment. These people run a lot of businesses in regional areas, particularly in New South Wales. Anyone in those towns will know they do not want anything to do with us normies and that they're fucking drowning in cash. They make a mockery of tax policies and enable charities and religious organizations to use more of their money for public benefit. Instead, these assholes give each other free loans to reinvest in their own financial interests. So you can really tell people really are starting to see through them. I mean, the ATO raid article, the first one that came out, has drawn in a ton of people bringing in their experiences, not just to comments underneath everything, but to everybody who has been on the front line. This is a good one that's really, I really wanted to point out. Massive domestic violence problems. They basically drink all day on Sunday when they go to church four times. Women can't sit with them in church either. They all are hungover on Mondays. You try and speak to a community girl one-on-one, and one of the male members will just stand there and monitor the conversation. They have minimal education, so they put really stupid people in positions of power, but have a worldly person there to help them. And again, this is another complaint that we get all the time, right? That the non-community members are not taken seriously at their job.
Oh, they'll pretend to if they can use you, and if you've got some skill that they need, they will pretend to respect you.
Exactly.
And they will pretend to have invested in you. But the minute you don't play ball, you are out that door in 5 seconds flat.
Exactly. Another comment. I worked for one of these Brethren businesses when I was younger. Their owner was actually pretty level-headed and seemed normal, as well as his son and daughter. I got the feeling he was aware of the system he was kind of trapped in and just making do as best as he could in the circumstances. Though, the other families involved in the business had the typical personalities of what you hear about Brethren people. Arrogant, sexist, very strange vibes, etc. When I first started working there, I thought it was weird all the company cars had no radios and they still used a fax machine a lot. One of the guys there told me how him and his friend once snuck to see a movie but were caught. They had to stand in front of the church and apologize.
Yeah, and the point here about this family being quite normal and level-headed, this is a sad thing. We're not saying that they're all like this and they're all bullies and that they're all horrible people. The sad thing is that the grassroots people that aren't like this, that aren't, you know, caught up in this whole money-hungry bullying thing, they're the ones that are suffering. They're the ones that can't, like, because they're trying to be moral, they're trying to do everything morally right, and they just suffer. They're just at the bottom of the totem pole being used.
Someone says, LOL, I've had some exposure to the operation and saw this a mile off. And then another comment, I think anyone who came near them knew they are shady, vicious hypocrites who hurt their fellow cult members as easily as those outside their sect. but they give fat brown paper bags under the table to all the right people, which means ultimately nothing will come of this. It never does.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is what I think. Well, I mean, you're all very optimistic. You're very optimistic to think that anything will come of this.
I totally do think it will. But that's because I have talked to some people. Like I've gone and talked to some people. And
yeah, and look, I hope you're right. I absolutely hope you're right. But it wouldn't surprise me in the least if at the end of the day there's been cash payouts for they'd be just like, oh, sorry, you found a mistake. Boom, there's a shitload of cash.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but Cassie, that's still a win.
There's a fine to go with that. Boom, take the money. There's so much money. They'll just pay
it off. That's still a win, Cassie. That's still costing them money, right? At the end of the day, the fact that they've had so much attention now, like it will have a ripple effect. People are being made aware. I had somebody reach out to me and said that they applied for the One School Global Sydney school, right? And she said she got notified by the person that was doing the recruitment agency and said, look, yeah, I've got the job. And then she said, I saw a TikTok and watched a podcast. And then we're like, hang on, this is the same school. This is the cult. Oh, my God. And sent a message back saying, hey, you know, because I'm hearing more about your community, our values don't align. It's a ripple effect. Same with charities not wanting to have to do with them anymore with the rapid relief team because they realized that, in essence, they're part of the problem. They're excommunicating people. They're the reason so many people that leave suffer from mental health, suffer from mental health issues, suffer from alcohol abuse because of the conditions.
That made me rage. That made me rage. When you see them handing boxes to, you know, Headspace and people that are talking about, you know, charities that are meant to be helping people with mental health, they couldn't care less about people with mental health. They could not care less. In fact, they'll perpetuate people's mental health. If it suits their purpose, they will perpetuate that problem.
We know this from our own experience, right? Like people that are 100%. Slightly different or stand up to the system, they brand as that she's just mental. They're mental, you know.
It's such a word they use, right? Yeah, and then they turn around and use RRT. And yeah, I'm with you, Cassie.
As a charity working with the rapid relief team, like just note, like, yes, you're doing great works, no doubt. And there are probably people that volunteered on the charity. Like I was once volunteering on the rapid relief team. And, you know, you think you are doing a good works, but until you see the bigger picture, then you realize it's just all a paraphernalia. Like you realize there's nothing in it that is wholesome or true or real. And in fact, they're part of the problem. So as a charity, if you're dealing with the rapid relief team or as a member of parliament, if you're standing there posing with the rapid relief team, we were given instructions to make sure we were engaging with one political member, one local entity, someone of note that would make us look good, that would make the rapid relief team look good, because at the end of the day, if they don't have the rapid relief team charity, they're not a place of public worship, they will not then have charitable status, which is our taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah. And I mean, they have a whole list of rules that they need to follow when they set up for RRT. It's like looking for the best spot. I'll actually post some of the pictures up here.
Yeah, like we've seen that, like find out where the cameras are, find out, you know, everything like that, yeah.
Okay, so the next comment here is they've got a big presence in the Western Australia wheat belt. They have a number of agribusinesses in various towns and use their collective power to give each other favorable deals. And they clearly don't have a problem with dealing with outsiders when it comes to taking money. And someone responds to that, exactly. It's only other people who are evil. Their money is fine. Another comment, I worked for some and it was a terrible experience. I ended up getting a lawyer involved and won my case over here in New Zealand. They are so straight, it's not funny, and question trust constantly. Another comment, hey bro, I used to work at one of their companies. Are they all massive drinkers or is it just the mob I work for?
We can answer that one. They're massive drinkers.
Yeah, exactly. They are massive drinkers. Anywhere, anytime. Another one. I used to work for a brethren company who ran everything through UBT. So many weird letters from them. ATO will have their hands full. So this is just reassuring, right? It's so reassuring with everything that's going on.
And like we're getting feedback from people that have just seen things that don't have the forensic access or the finances that the ATO do. They're seeing the back end, the stuff that we don't see. This is why I think something will come from this, that it's so important that this has happened, because it will be a significant change in the cult's history.
Yeah. Another comment, I worked with the family of the Plymouth Brethren. It's a scary cult. I left as soon as I could. Glad you go out alive. This is a comment to one of Ben's TikToks. Another one, I worked for a Brethren company for almost 2 years. I wanted out. I spoke up, etc. They forced me out in August last year. All of this is so true. Another one, their work environments are so toxic. Hubby is a supervisor for them and they constantly have their foot on his throat. Such dictators.
And if you're inside the Brethren listening to this, this is not a group of bitter exes or bitter outs, you know, getting around them and are disgruntled about being kicked out of the church. For a start, we left. We weren't kicked out. We left because it was toxic. Now, to add weight to what we have to say, to add any clarity that you might be needing, these comments are all from non-members. Yes, they might be worldlies, and in your mind, you might think they're beneath you, but they are regular humans like the rest of us, and like you, might come as a newsflash. But these are comments are from people that have observed it. They're not just four or five bitter exes or bitter outs. These are actual normal humans, regular humans like us, that have the same opinion. I think it's high time that people in there start listening to outsiders then, rather than putting us all in the same box. Okay, listen to the general public.
Yeah.
So what is the testimony that they're trying to uphold?
Yeah.
That's my question, is what is the testimony that they're trying to uphold here when that is the opinion and that is the way they come across to outsiders, not to us ex-members, but to outsiders? Where is the testimony? Where is the Christianity? Answer me that question. Come and tell me. If I've got it wrong, I'd be glad to sit down and have you explain it to me, because I am baffled.
Yeah.
Be careful saying that one, Cassie. They will tell you wrong.
Come. I'll welcome you in. I'll give you a scotch.
We've been asking for those conversations for a while now. They won't come. So this article goes on to say two of the former employees say the business is acting as a large buying group involved with invoicing between the vast and complex network of charitable and profit-making entities, which the Brethren call the community ecosystem. The ecosystem is designed to safeguard the wealth of Brethren members in keeping with the church's radical doctrine of separation, which allows the saints to do business with worldly people, but not to eat, drink, or socialize with them. Hales preached in 2010 in ministry that is regarded by the Brethren as holy writ, that the world is a morass of wickedness and defilement and impurity, and that they should not associate with it. And I just, again, let's just unpack that for a second. I want people to understand, yes, there's good people in this church. There's very, very good people in this church. My family's in there. They're good people. They're down on the bottom of the totem pole. Even though they hate me, they're still good people. But everybody is brainwashed to make money, hand the money over, and put themselves beneath the Hales. If you have the choice not to, don't work for them.
Yes.
If you have if you have the capability to not work for them, then don't. Find something else. You know, if you are stuck in a position where you can't walk away from it, then that's different, right? But you know what? Maybe you can help the ATO out in behind the scenes.
Yeah, I would say that if you've got a position where you can see that things are morally corrupt, then do something about it, because you are much better off to do something about it and not contribute to this.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly the advice I gave out to this person that had reached out to me, right? Was that
there will be fall guys. And if there's anyone in a position that's mildly compromising, get the hell out, because you will become the fall guy.
Yeah. So as the article goes on, you guys can read it. I'll post the link to this article in the description. It just goes through all of the mansions they have, photos of them, and you guys can go and peruse those at your own free will. It just goes through everything that they
own. But just on that point, looking at that house there with the big, great big pool, my grandpa built a house and built a pool back in the day, And he was told to fill it in because they weren't allowed to have pools. So how times have changed, I think. That's just mind-boggling.
And I mean, not everybody have these pools, right? Like, this is just the top of it.
Also,
yes, but not everyone has those pools, but the elite do.
Exactly.
And they'll control the grassroots people and tell them they're not allowed to have big, you know, pools and whatever else.
From what we can see from this, it's their weekend property, right? It's their homes that we saw that were in Eastwood or whatever in the previous photo. They don't have pools. But, of course, because brethren come to those houses and they're going to see they'll have a pool, then they're like, oh, well, you know, Bruce Hales has a pool. That's why they'd have these other houses with the pools or the billiard tables or whatever it was. I mean, I know that these are just stock images from the real estate, so, of course, they're going to have whatever the previous person left. But, essentially, it makes sense that you'd have the outer houses that people don't go to, that the regular grassroots members don't go to, because then they'll see that you have, you know, gyms and pools and whatever else.
Yeah.
And don't tell me you filled them in, because I very, very, very much doubt it. And we can see on Google they're not filled in.
So I want to go into more of these four former UPT staff in this article. Once they were there, the four former UPT staff agreed they found the environment oppressive. Non-Brethren employees, known internally as non-community or non-coms, were discriminated against and sometimes bullied. They say, and if you didn't conform or if you questioned anything, you had a target on your back. There was surveillance everywhere. There were cameras on every floor, above workstations, near exit and entry points, said one. Another said he had been called into a meeting and criticized for something he'd said in a private conversation, which was relayed back to me virtually word for word. It took a year or so after I left to stop looking over my shoulder, the former employee said.
I just want to pause you there, Cheryl. That I hear so much from people that have worked from Brethren, and more so like from our own experience, you know, when you first leave, because you're constantly monitored and watched. I hear that a lot where people are often saying, oh my God, it took me a whole year to stop looking over my back, to stop being like, am I doing what's right? Am I conforming? Am I, you know, and that is not unfamiliar, because even more so if you're a member in the cult, because they are wanting to catch you out. They are wanting to hold you accountable.
Yeah. And then it goes on, something that we've talked about in many, many, many podcasts. The free consumption of alcohol by Brethren members, a problem across the church, was rife. And women, who were regarded in the church as second-class citizens, were treated in UBT as if they were only fit for making the coffee and taking notes. It's hard to read that paragraph and then see these two men underneath it who just, it just triggers me. It's those priests that make the females feel like you have no purpose here but to be subservient to the men.
And like from my experience, I don't think I ever really met, oh, I've probably spoken to Gareth once, maybe met him, like said hello, but Charles was a childhood bully. And he was known to be a bully. And from what I've heard from people that still or have just recently had experiences with him, nothing's changed, just a bigger bully. Yeah. And anything that I've ever heard from victims of Gareth Hales, the misconduct there, that their podcast for another day.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get them to actually come on the podcast and share their story. Incredible.
Well, stop acting like a cult and have a conversation. Exactly. Stop acting like a cult and come and have a conversation.
Yeah.
That's all I say.
Yeah. So in UBT, they provided food midday. Former employees said it was clear that this was to make sure they did not leave the building for lunch. It was like if you took more than 30 minutes, you were wasting the company's money. Another former employee said they had to work on a weekly task list. You have to fill out a form. Every task you've done, and that gets reviewed by senior management. They would flog a dead horse when it came to work. There were a lot of people who were very stressed. Non-Brethren women on staff were discouraged from wearing pants in line with church doctrine, and males over a certain age hold a certain stature and everyone else is below them. It is an extremely undiversified organization and community. This article was so well written. It was so well written. It's everything that we have known, and for it to be printed.
And everything we've experienced, particularly like this next paragraph, it says a third employee said the comms or a Brethren community member all wore blue shirts, which was normal in there. You all had to wear a certain colored shirt. I remember being reprimanded for wearing a check shirt or for having a logo written on my shirt because John Hale said no branding. And then I remember when I once wore out, I used to wear on a Sunday, I used to wear like a white short sleeve shirt with no collar because you had to wear, you know, long sleeve collared shirts. I remember one time having cufflinks and collars, and Lester Martin, who was, you know, a priest of mine at some point, pulled me up saying, Mr. Hales doesn't agree with big collars. So I went to the opposite extreme and had no collars. And I wore like, on the Sunday, you'd have to wear navy pants or blue pants, and I wore olive green pants. And I made a point of wearing that to be like, no, you don't fucking control me. And I remember being at a lunch where Lester Martin was at, and he said to me in front of his wife and my family, why don't you just wear normal pants like the rest of us? And I said, I'm not a robot. And he was like, you can't just, you just don't want to fit in. You just like to stand out. I'm like, yeah, I do. I am different. I'm okay with that, you know? And
the irony is if they saw another group or another sect or cult or whatever, you know, mandating what people were wearing, they would call it cult in a second. They would absolutely 100%. Label that shit. They cannot see the parallel in their own community.
Yeah. And then this this article goes on, a non-brethren employee came to work one day wearing a pink shirt. And I guess that's where I was sharing my experience to draw a parallel to this. And a senior executive called him. So a brethren called him a fairy little faggot. In the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church, obviously we know this, homosexuality is unacceptable, and some gay members in the church in the past have been prescribed drugs to chemically castrate them. And we've had that story over and over where Craig, who, you know, on confessing he was gay, a brethren doctor prescribed him drugs to help chemically castrate him. And, you know, I spoke to another gay member because obviously myself, I was a bit younger than Craig, so I fortunately didn't have that experience. But, and I was told that, well, it didn't work for him, so, you know, we're not going to do it to you. And I'm like, well, no, you were caught out. That's why you didn't do it, not doing it to me. But another member that left, he was given four options or three options. And he said to me, it was to get married to the Lord and be right, chemically castrated, or suicide. He was told that by the Hales family.
Wow.
And there was no fifth option of leaving the church. It was, these are the four options. Two of them were suicide. One was suicide and one was chemical castration. And the rest was deny your life and your existence and marry a woman. And I think the other one was just, yeah, marry the Lord, marry the assembly, which it means basically be a single guy and commit yourself to the leader.
On the point of women being subservient, the whole reason my mind went light bulb moment, you have to get out, was because I questioned how subservient. I was like, well, how subservient are you expecting me to be? Is it to the point of, you know, rape? And they couldn't answer the question, so they questioned my mental state. So, you know, that's the level of subservience they're expecting.
This is exactly right, Cassie. This is what they do. Any woman that dares to question them or stand up to them, they're just honest, simple questions, right, of a youth growing up within a very...
Well, I was just concerned. I was pretty... I knew that I wouldn't be that subservient. I couldn't. Sorry. I'm going to put my hand up right now and say that that's not going to happen.
And they like to quote, you know, it's better to live on a rooftop or something than in a house with a contentious woman. And they would always quote things like that. They would speak out about women that were outspoken, and they would call them the contentious housewife, you know, quoting that scripture. But an interesting thing to go on here with the article is that one employee said they had a surveillance on me the moment I left and told me if I didn't sign the deed of release, they'd have surveillance on me for the next 6 to 12 months after that. It's all about intimidation. It's all about intimidation. That's illegal. Like, that is coercing somebody. That is bullying somebody. If you're in there and you're being told this and you're not a brethren member, firstly, go to the police, because that is illegal.
Mostly it's scare tactics. It's probably not illegal. They've probably got not a legal leg to stand on, to be honest, but people that don't, they know that you don't know, so they'll hold it over you. So if at the very least, go and get some legal advice before you cave, at the very least, like,
do you? And I think that's what's happening now, is people are getting brave to report things right? Not only to ATO or to the police, but people are coming out and they're now brave enough to let's do this, right? They're starting to see the movement take a massive turn in supporting everybody being able to come forward with what they know. Yeah. So this goes on to the UPT spokesperson. He denied all the former employees' accounts, saying it was a great workplace. Well, what do you expect them to do? Our staff work hard, are paid well, and dress professionally is normal in any other business consultancy environment. The statement said, UPT treats all staff equally regardless of their background and in line with federal and state anti-discrimination, other workplace laws. This is absolutely false. If we go back to the podcast with Floss, podcast, I'm not sure what podcast it is. She worked for UBT and her podcast was rife with discrimination. It is
and this sexism.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, she was called a whore by Bruce Hales.
Yeah.
He basically said our women within the cult are all pure and the rest of you are just whores.
Yeah.
So that speaks for itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So we know it's just an absolute lie. There is also a video on YouTube. It's a podcast that Michael Batchelor did on the Sydney Morning.
It's also on Spotify.
Yeah.
This is also on Spotify. It's a really good 19-20 minute podcast. Just really, really well, encapsulates everything that's going on.
So I'll attach the link to that below. And the reason why we do these podcasts like this is for the insiders that don't have access to any of this. So it's super important for us to be able to give a rundown of everything that they're missing out on. We're their news, right? The news they get is not the news. And then we had Craig Hoyle put out an article just recently. I will attach the link to that below too. He goes over the exact same stuff that's been in and out of the other articles. So yeah, anybody who can go through this article of Craig's, he's got some excellent, excellent information in here on how everything works. We have this diagram here that explains exactly how all the money is funneled through. Yeah, so here's a little clip on how their ecosystem and their money funding goes.
Money laundering 101. The type of money laundering used by One School Global Unispace is called TBML, trade-based money laundering. The Canadian government gives this definition. Trade-based money laundering is the process of disguising proceeds of crime and other illicit financial flows as legitimate trade transactions. In the case of One School Global Unispace, there are two reasons to disguise the origin of the funds. Firstly, the funds have been donated to a charity and therefore include approximately 30% tax refund from the government. Secondly, the donors believe that all their donations are used for children's education. To see how TBML works, we will take a starting figure of $80 million to be laundered from tax-exempt charitable donations into the pockets of the criminals. The first step in any money laundering scheme is to divide up the sum into many smaller transactions, small enough to fly under the radar. One School Global has about 135 campuses, so by splitting the $80 million between them, each campus only has to launder about $600,000. TBML doesn't work for commodities that have a known value, so it is no good selling each campus a school bus for $600,000. The tax inspector would smell a rat. However, building projects are ideal for TBML. There is no way to know from the school trust accounts whether the price charged for a building or redevelopment project is sensible or not. The Self-Directed Learning, SDL, project provided a perfect opportunity to launder a huge sum of money. Every campus would need a large and expensive redevelopment of indeterminate value. But TBML does not work with competitive bidding. A genuine competition for the job would immediately expose the extra sum being laundered through. So Bruce Hales used his spiritual authority to enforce a Unispace monopoly on the SDL projects globally. This having been established, All Unispace had to do was calculate a sensible cost price for the job, add $600,000, and push it through. Anyone who objected was cut into the profits or threatened with excommunication. Repeat the formula 135 times, and voila! $80 million has been laundered from tax-exempt charitable funds donated for children right into the pockets of the Unispace directors. Everything is invoiced, the books all balance, and if nobody squeals, they will get away with it. So who was committing a crime in all this? The victims, the ordinary grassroots brethren, were inadvertently defrauding the government by claiming tax relief on donations that are not actually used for charitable purposes. One School Global and its local trusts were defrauding the brethren by not getting competitive tenders and knowingly assisting Unispace in perpetrating a massive financial fraud on both the brethren and the government. The Unispace directors and PBCC leadership cooked up the whole crooked scheme and were the ultimate benefactors, abusing their religious influence and godlike powers of excommunication to both eliminate dissent and to stimulate extraordinary levels of giving from the brethren. What are the red flags for this type of fraud? There are two very distinctive features of TBML that stand out in this case. 1. Conflict of interest. Many of the school trustees were also Unispace directors or had family or business connections to Unispace directors. All the One School Global management was under the direct controlling influence of Bruce Hales, whose sons owned Unispace. 2. A monopoly. TBML can't exist in the face of honest competition. The brazen imposition of a Unispace monopoly was proof that something fraudulent was proceeding. Here is an illustration of the One School Global Unispace play. At the top left you have the ordinary grassroots brethren, the 40,000 or so parents and grandparents who toil to feed the endless appetite of One School Global. To the right of the brethren you have the initiatives, UBT, Campus & Co, Streamline 3, Trove, Connect, Orbit, One Medifund, and so on, all of which suck money and labour from the brethren and feed it into One School Global. Brethren also donate money directly to One School Global through local fund days, bake sales, legacies, etc. So there is a direct arrow from the brethren to One School Global as well as via the initiatives. Below the brethren you have the government, who give an approximately 30% tax rebate and in many countries also directly subsidise the schools. One School Global and Unispace are the two washing machines, and together they comprise the laundry. The One School Global machine sucks in charitable tax-exempt funds from the brethren, passes them on to Unispace via grossly overpriced invoicing, and Unispace delivers the money to Gareth and Charles as an apparently legitimate commercial profit. Gareth, Charles, and Daddy Bruce are all smiling. I wonder why.
So I want to thank you, Ben and Cassie, for joining me today as we go through these articles that have been put out. And we are hoping that the insiders that can't access this helps you guys understand and are able to start making the plans you need to make if you're planning on leaving. And please reach out to Olive Leaf Network if you're needing help in New Zealand or Australia. You can message us here, info.getalife@proton.me, for any more resources that you're needing. And we are here for you guys. This is an extreme opportunity to be able to make the plans that you've all been thinking about and really get out and start living your life. So thanks, everyone. Much love to everybody. Until next time, take care.
How can you support Get a Life Podcast? You can donate internationally via PayPal at www.paypal.me/Get a Life Podcast.
PayPal also has a QR code that can be scanned. Or donate to our Get a Life podcast GoFundMe. If you're in a high-demand religious group and need help, please go to oliveleaf.network. To share your story or be a guest on the show, email info.getalife@proton.me. Check out www.get-a-life.net for Get a Life merchandise, books, and ways to support or get support. Please remember to like this video, subscribe to Get a Life, and comment.